Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and this morning's conversation is with Dick Strasser, Chief Financial Officer and Executive Vice President of the United States Postal Service. Joining us in our conversation is another PwC partner, Bill Takis.
Now, Dick, the GAO has recently challenged the Postal Service to develop a transformation plan for itself. How do you see that working its way out, and how do you see the Postal Service transforming itself into the 21st century?
Yes, Bill. Actually, it's been a year ago now. GAO put us on their high-risk list, and they were quick to point out that they were putting the Postal Service on a high-risk list not because of the way it was financially or operationally managed currently. What they were saying was that there needed to be structural change to the Postal Service by way of legislation, and they saw that there were so many stakeholders with so many disparate viewpoints that the process for transformation needed to be defined and needed to be rigorously followed so that before a crisis would occur, that in fact the Postal Service was transformed or was reinvigorated, if you will, for another three decades. What's happened in recent years with growing competition in the package services as well as electronic alternatives, we've seen at least a slowing in the growth of first-class mail. And this year, of course, we've seen a decline. And so the model that says you can sustain the network with and the growth in the network with growing volume is called into question. If you go back to the beginning of United States Postal Service, we had about 89 billion pieces of mail. We now handle 209 billion pieces of mail. We had 63 million deliveries. We now have 138 million deliveries. Back then, we had 760,000 career employees. We now have about 750,000 career employees. So we've become more efficient in volume per person. But the fact of the matter is that in the 90s, we were not beneficiaries of the growth in the economy the way the dot-com growth and other technology growth generated increases in the economy. We were not the beneficiaries of that in terms of additional mail volume. In fact, we've seen single-piece first-class mail volume decline. That's the 34-cent stamp decline for the last 3 or 4 years because of alternatives. So GAO put us on their high-risk list, said that the Postal Service should provide a transformation plan, and that's what we're in the course of pursuing right now to be filed at the end of next month, end of March.
How long would the transformation take place over?
The way we're approaching it, Paul, is in three stages. The first stage is to outline so that there's no misunderstanding. Everything that we as Postal Management and the Board of Governors have directed us to do within the current legislative mandates that we have. The second phase is, or what would we recommend we be given in terms of additional latitude, whether that be pricing flexibility, rates flexibility, and other things. And of course, then the third thing is the fundamental question, the public policy question, what are the alternatives? And of course, they range from on one extreme, perhaps going back to being just a government agency that is subsidized to provide universal mail service, to perhaps on the other extreme of the spectrum, a full privatization of what we now know as the resources and the operations of the Postal Service. And so what we're doing is we're categorizing our suggestions in those three categories so that Congress will have the opportunity to review this. And how long it will take? Well, we certainly believe that we ought to address these things rapidly. Over the 30-year period, the experiment has worked. We've essentially broken even. We've collected revenues of $1 trillion, $42 billion, and we've expended expenses to run the system of $1 trillion, $47 billion. So we've missed break even by $5 billion, which is a lot of money, but it's a half of 1%. We don't know going forward that that will be the situation, and the problem is prior to reorganization, the Post Office Department was subsidized up to 25% of its operating expenses. If we ever got to that position, for example, given our financials in this day and age, we'd be talking about $15 to $20 billion additional federal subsidy to the service, and I don't know that that's really something public policymakers would want to have happen, especially now that our government surplus has diminished.
You talked a little bit about the various stakeholders within the Postal Service, and certainly they are very interested, I'm sure, in the transformation of the Postal Service. How have you solicited their feedback from employees, customers, competitors, maybe even?
We've extensively solicited feedback on our website. We've put out a discussion outline a number of months ago. We've invited comments both in terms of written form, also in terms of different forums we've had at our National Postal Forum. As you know, we hold those twice a year, all the way to the point where our board actually has participated in discussion sessions with panels of our larger customers, as well as panels of our union representatives and management association representatives. And all of this is designed to garner as much input in terms of laying out the prospects and the alternatives in the short term, and then, of course, the ultimate model in the longer term, or models, the choices of models. And then it will really be up to other processes to determine what's the consensus public policy for what the future authorization of the United States Postal Service should be. If it's government owned, continues to be government owned, what kind of latitudes do you give it to manage itself in this day and age, as opposed to the day and age it was established in 1970?
Is the conversation even about what measures of success will be, or is that well understood?
I think that's a good question, Paul. I think that measures of success are different things to different stakeholders, and so what needs to occur is there needs to be some kind of confluence or alignment of those indicators. I think there's no doubt that an efficient national mail system generally is something that is ascribed to. The interesting aspect of it, and you see this going on in the European post too, is whether you can sustain a system on either a flat line volume, or worse yet, ultimately a volume that's diverted by electronics. How do you do that and maintain financial self-sufficiency? So it really comes down to, as you say, what is it that the organization would provide as its mandate? How frequently would it provide it, for example, and things of that nature? And then, of course, at what cost? And are you still going to hold it? So need to be self-sufficient as a public policy.
You mentioned earlier about other foreign postal administrations who are looking at the same types of challenges that you have. Have you looked to them about the way that they've gone about reforming their postal administrations over the last few years?
We have, although it's really a challenge because their circumstances are significantly different. In Europe, for example, state-owned enterprises are more commonplace. In the United States, you don't see very many government agencies buying up privately held or publicly held companies. You also have the dynamics of the European Union, where some countries are attempting to ensure that their post has a competitive edge in terms of being the post for the EU as opposed to just their country. So there's some parallels, there's some learning there, but there's also some different circumstances, I think.
Well, Dick, I want to shift gears here because we're almost out of time, but you've spent your whole career working for the Postal Service, and I'm curious, what advice would you give to a young person perhaps interested in a career in the Postal Service now?
Actually, I think probably now is the best time. Everyone's heard about the baby boomers reaching retirement age, and it's true with our agency. We've actually got a very aggressive development program for our associate supervisors, becoming supervisors, first-line supervisors. We've got an advanced leadership program that takes individuals out for 4 weeks of school, classroom training, and opportunity to develop. We're about to begin another management intern program that's targeted to bringing outside talent into the organization for specific positions that we foresee, line management positions. So we are gearing up even more so than we have in recent years in terms of people development. And we know we've got very talented people within our organization who will step up also. Fortunately, we've got a base, a large base of over 700,000 career employees. But for anyone interested, I'd encourage them to go on our website, usps.com, and look at the opportunities, keep an eye open. Here at headquarters, there are opportunities for summer internships of that nature. And as you can tell, I think, from my whole tone, I wouldn't have traded my 33 years for any kind of other experience. I just have had just a tremendous opportunity for personal development, but I also think have contributed and been able to contribute in arenas that you know would have been very, very difficult to achieve in the private sector, only because I didn't come strictly. I developed my business background at the Postal Service's sponsorship later in my career.
Well, Dick, now we are out of time. Bill and I want to thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Paul.
And once again, that website?
It's USPS.com.
Great. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dick Strasser, Chief Financial Officer and Executive Vice President of the United States Postal Service. Be sure and visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. There you can learn more about our programs, and you can get a transcript of today's interesting conversation. Again, that's endowment.pwcglobal.com. This is Paul Lawrence. See you next week.